Bang.
What's up, George? What's going on in the House of Crazy tonight?
In the House of Crazy tonight, we have Ms. Madeline Holly Rosen. I'm messing up her name. Boston Metaphysical. Boston Metaphysical Society is the name of the book that she has on Kickstarter. And we're going to be talking to her tonight.
Yes, I think you need a metaphysical. Let's get it!
Show for independence all around, giving you a platform to spread your word all over town. Cast the Craze is the place to promote to your fans with the dream of Medina and Sam the Crazy Man. Subscribe to our show and never miss an episode. It's time to get your meds, listen to us on the go. Updated every week, we never miss a day. Join the squad, come on in, it's time to cast the Craze. If you are an independent,
cast the Craze!
Making moves on your own,
cast the Craze!
On your grind in the streets,
cast the Craze!
Join the movement.
Catch the craze.
Yeah, George, we did it again. Come on now. Now you want to do it. Catch the craze.
Welcome to Catch the Craze Podcast. I'm your host with the most, Sam the Crazy Man Vera, and I am with
George the Dreamer Medina. Welcome, welcome, welcome back, everyone, to another exciting episode of Catch the Craze. We are live. It is Tuesday, April 26th at 8 p.m., and we are back with another Kickstarter special. We have Ms. Madeline Holly Rosen. I think I said it better this time around. She's probably in the back like this month. Boston Metaphysical Society Volume 2 is the name of the book. And if you have not done so yet, please subscribe to the channel. Give us a like, comment below, say hello. What's up, Johnny? And hit the bell. Make sure that you are hitting that bell so that you are, you know, notified whenever we go live. But what's going on with you, Sammy? Talk to me, my brother.
Come and talk to me. So let's see. It's a beautiful day. I'm looking out the window. I see the skyline. I was watching a hawk flying around looking for some chihuahuas.
You got to be careful with the pets out there, man.
Here in Texas, these animals are vicious. You know, we had a scare during the winter with the coyotes and the bobcats going and taking everybody's animals.
I heard about that.
Yeah. I have a, I think it's a 7-foot fence or 8-foot fence, tall fence, perimeter fence. But when I'm in the, I stay in the yard because I have a lot of little dogs.
Yeah.
And sometimes you see the hawks swooping around looking for prey. And I'm like, oh, hell no. And I was like, get inside. But no, it's cool. You know, the other night was crazy. I didn't see it in the forecast. I didn't get it on my phone. But I woke up at 1 a.m. to the sound of a bowling alley. I thought it was like my house. There were like bowlers in the house. It was thunder, lightning, rain was coming through. My floodlights, because I have perimeter floodlights that go off of motion, they were constantly blaring through the windows. I couldn't shut them down. It was nuts. But other than that, just, you know, getting ready for the expo. That's it.
Nice. Yeah, man. Expo coming up.
Yes.
The expo's happening in about a month. From now, a little less than a month from now, right? You'll be at Licensing Expo in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Las Vegas, Nevada. With my boy Paul Steinberg. We'll be out there together. You know, he's a customer service extraordinaire. So, just been getting ready. Got everything print at the printers. I sent everything off to the printers. I got the graphics, the prototypes, the books. You know, I got the, you know, Forbidden, the complete 160-page novel. It's here, so that's going to be with me out there. Yeah, so it's a lot of stuff, the bags, all that stuff. So I'm getting ready for that. And also, you know, getting ready for the launch of There's an Alien in My Toilet, Mr. Dudarius Uranius. Yeah, number two, issue number two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you back this issue number one and you come back for issue number two, you're going to get this refrigerator magnet of Super Duty with the diabolical egomaniac overlord nemesis Poopoo in the background. So, yeah, you'll get that. And also, if you back Wonder Duck and you back this into My Toilet, you will get that. You'll get that magnet from me as well. So that's dope.
Awesome. Awesome. So make sure that, yeah, because Wonder Duck launches next week.
Next May week?
The 4th. That's right.
Yeah. And George is going to have the Wonder Duck dance.
Yeah. Am I really gonna have? Did you do the choreography for it yet or no?
Joe, you've been dancing since you were a kid. I remember weren't you like a backup dancer for like what's his name, Paul Abdul?
Nah. I wasn't the cat in the video. That wasn't me. No. Yeah, that was a good video. Remember when that video first came out and you had that dancing cat as a cartoon in the video?
Two steps back.
Look at you.
Yeah, it's opposite the track. You remember that?
Of course. That's the song. That's the song. Anyway, there will be no dancing, okay?
Why not, man? You got to give them something.
I have no room. What am I going to dance?
Where the people have demanded it.
The people have not demanded it. We've been talking all this mess this whole time. Anyway, if you haven't signed up for the Adventures of Wonder Duck, please do so right now. Go at the link is in the show notes. Hit that link. Subscribe to the so you can get notified. The launch is next week, May 4th at 8:30. It'll be here on the show. So tune in at 8 p.m. The show starts at 8 p.m. I'm gonna hit the button at 8:30. So for all those people who have already signed up and you've let me know that you signed up, I'm gonna hook you up. We're gonna have some raffles. We're gonna do the spinners here. I'm going to be giving away this t-shirt, not this one, but a t-shirt like this.
It's going to be that one. He's going to wash it.
I'll wash it before I send it. I'm going to be giving away t-shirts for the people who signed up early as a thank you for signing up. So you want to sign up. I will know who signed up because you told me. You sent me the information. I have put it in my spreadsheet. And then I will put it onto the spinner, spin it, and give away some t-shirts. Now, the other thing I'm giving away is this. So for everybody who has signed up, I will be giving away an 8x10 print. Now, the PDF will be sent to your email. When you decide to pledge, I will send you a physical copy. There it is, the flick. Bam, bam, bam. Just so you can hear the quality.
Yeah,
they're going to be numbered. They are going to be numbered, one of as many as you guys sign up. And there will be a special crowdfunding. I won't be offering that on the campaign at all. Nobody else is going to get that other than the people who sign up early as a thank you for signing up. So you want to sign up and you want to tune in. Make sure you subscribe to the channel because we're going live on the 4th. So if you are watching right now and you haven't done so yet, hit that subscribe button. Stay subscribed and watch us next week as we go live with the Adventures of Wonder Duck. Big shout out to Johnny Syfax who's in the chat. And anybody else who's in the chat, say what's up. Let us know you are watching.
Word up. Absolutely. So yeah, it's exciting. I'm still waiting. Yeah. Anybody out there who applied for Fan Expo in Dallas, which was supposed to be in June, have you gotten any information from them? Because they've populated their website with all their guests, but they haven't responded to any of the artists for Artist Alley. At least I haven't. They took my money in February, but they never got a confirmation. Nothing. And when I emailed them, they said we still haven't put the roster out. That's like a month away.
Damn.
It's a month away.
I'm doing the $100 pledge. Easy guy, don't go broke.
Oh yeah, yeah, don't go broke, yeah, bro. Johnny. We know you with those pledges.
Yeah.
Starts off $100, then they come down.
When is John coming back on the show? John Syfax, when are you coming back? We haven't done a horseman show because you've been MIA. So
yes,
let us know when you're coming back.
But anyway, so yeah, I'm waiting for Fan. So outside of the Vegas, when I come back from that, I'm hoping to be doing the June Expo in Dallas, the Fan Expo. And then I have a kid's event, Comic-Con in August. And I'm looking to lock something in for September. in nice. October, yeah. And then that's it for the year. But yeah.
For those watching, I'm going to be, and I think Johnny's going to be there too. I'm going to be at Terrific Con in July, at the end of July, beginning. I think it's the last week of July. Terrific Con. I'm going to be out there. I don't know if I'm going to be behind a table yet. I don't know that yet, but I will be there, just checking it out. And so if you guys want to hang out, let me know. I'm going to be out there. So yeah, definitely. Full-time job now. Oh, snap.
All right, wow.
Look at you. Damn. Look at you, full-time job.
Who's that looking in my window? Wow. Nobody now. Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't know what kind of job you got, but anyway, but congratulations, Johnny, to you and getting your job. Do your thing. So again, if you're watching this episode, give us a thumbs up. And we're going to bring in our guest right after this commercial break. And just to remind everybody my little green friend is coming back. So here's a little stint. Welcome, Madeline, to the show.
Hi, thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, Madeline, how badly did I mess up your last name?
Oh, no, it was perfect.
Oh, you're lying to me, but I appreciate
it. No, it was absolutely perfect. Sometimes I get called Madeline, which is close, but not quite.
I was just about to say it. I was about to say Madeline, and I was like, wait, pull back, Sam. Go to the
And then sometimes I get the Rosing instead of the Rosing. But, I mean, those are understandable mistakes. It's not a problem. Hey, easily fixable.
I have four letters in my last name. It's V-E-R-A. It's pronounced Vera. But in school, my teachers would always say Vera. They would somehow add an extra letter in there. It's like, it's not Vera, it's Vera. So I understand.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show, Madeline. We appreciate you coming on. For those watching, we are on the show here with Madeline. We're talking about your book, Boston Metaphysical Society, Volume 2. It's on Kickstarter right now, and you're kicking butt. Yes. 20,787, 569 backers, and you have 15 days to go. How are you doing? How has the experience of this Kickstarter been? You know, have you been going crazy like we normally do when we have these campaigns going on?
Well, I'm a veteran of Kickstarter. This is actually my 11th campaign.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. So, yeah, there is always a certain amount of anxiety. But since I've, this isn't my first rodeo. I'm a lot calmer for all of these. And I keep track of things. And obviously, things are well planned by this stage of where these things should go. If I see some slowdowns, what I should do. But I do a significant amount of pre-planning before we even launch. And that's actually something I talk about. You guys may not realize this, but I've written a book called Kickstarter for the Independent Creator. Ah, okay, you do know, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I walk through exactly what I do. So every time I run a Kickstarter, it's pretty much wash, repeat. over and over. The only thing that's a little different about this one is, of course, I have my stretch goals mapped out ahead of time, because you have to, just as a reminder, people, budget your stretch goals so you don't get, bitten in the butt financially later on.
Yeah.
We learned it the hard way.
Sometimes that's the best way. It may be painful, but
the only way, right, to learn is the hard way. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, as far as the Kickstarter book that Madeline is talking about, if you go to Amazon, Kickstarter for the Independent Creator, A Practical Informative Guide to Crowdfunding, is on Amazon. You can get it for the Kindle, or you can get a paperback copy of it. I suggest, if anybody's doing a Kickstarter, to go and check this book out. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Madeline. Tell us a little bit about, what you do, who you are, how you got into this crazy industry and business of making comics.
Well, just in case your audience doesn't know about the story, it's about an ex-Pinkerton detective, a spirit photographer, and a genius scientist who battled supernatural forces in late 1800s Boston. The Kickstarter is for volume 2. We did start with volume 1, which is our what I call our original 6-issue miniseries with art by Emily Hugh. And volume 2 consists of our 4 sequels with art by Gwen Tavares, all in one big beautiful book, along with a bonus 10-page story with art by Roberta Ingranata, who's doing Doctor Who right now, and a fantastic cover by Marguerite Savage. But to make a long story short, Boston Metaphysical came to be from a TV pilot that I wrote when I was at UCLA Film School. Mm-hmm. And it was suggested that I adapt it into a graphic novel format to then use that as marketing material to sell it back to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Well, something happened along the way, which was I fell in love with writing comics and the independent creator comic book, comic community rather. And so guess what? I stayed and I'm here to stay. Which is why after the 6-issue miniseries, we've got 4 sequels out. There's a novel, an anthology, an audio drama called The Ghost Ship. And I'm currently working on the next series. So yeah, it took on a life of its own. And it's been a lot of fun being in this space. I really enjoy it.
I bet. So now, as a writer, right, I'm always curious about the different, I guess, not genres, but the different ways of writing. You have your prose, you have, you know, obviously your screenplay, your teleplays, you have your plays, you have your comics, right? So you wrote this as a screenplay. I'm always curious about the transition between screenplay and comic. How did you find that transition? Was it difficult? Did you read books on how to write comics, or was it something that just came kind of natural to you?
Well, no, I did take classes. I took sequential art course with Nunzio De Felipe, who's, you know, done a ton of stuff with Ani Press, and along with his wife, Christina Ware. And so I did have a slight advantage, I think, because screenwriting is visual writing, and so is comic book writing.
Right.
You know, they're both different types of visual writing. The difference is that in a TV or a film script, you do not direct. You don't tell the actors what to do. You don't say what angles everything should be. Unlike a comic book script, which is really a communication document to your team. Mm-hmm. So you have to communicate to your artist, to your colorist, to your letterer. So you'll have notes in there. And you are essentially the director. I do try not to micromanage my artists, because there's a reason why you hire artists, and that's to be an artist and be creative. but they do have to have some structure and say references if they're not familiar with a particular time period. Like when I first started working with Gwen on the sequels, I would send her a ton of reference photos for things like women's carpet bags and fashion and hats. And fortunately for me, she loved doing the research herself as well. So she got down to the nitty gritty of like men's socks and how many buttons are on the boots and all that other kind of fun stuff. So yeah, you try to find a balance, you know, as you learn to work with a particular artist and how far you let them go and how far you have to bring them back. And but it's been a really fun process.
How long have you been working with your artist?
Gwen was 4 years.
4 years. Wow. Yeah. So you guys have a nice, you have chemistry now at this point. You know, she knows what you like. You know how to write for what she, you know, her strengths and things like
that. You know, after a while, when you've worked with an artist, you develop a shorthand and it would be funny because, you know, there'd be a ghost or something in the script, particularly a ghost, and you have to indicate that some way, usually with the coloring. And I'd say like, oh yeah, and don't forget the glowy stuff. And she would know exactly what I was talking about. That's amazing. Oh yeah, we need the glowy stuff on Mary over here, and don't forget the glowy stuff over here. And she'd like, she knew exactly what I was talking about.
That's
so
awesome.
But that takes time to develop that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And especially in an arena where the collaborations tend to fall off. You know, we've had numerous amounts of creators on our show where they start off with an artist. Now they're on their fourth artist. Right. So being able to maintain that relationship adds to the value of what you're doing with your property.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what were some of the takeaways from 4 years ago to now? Like, what's different from when you were writing then to now that's made your process a lot smoother?
I'm not really sure. I probably know, but I've internalized it so much that I don't think about it.
Yeah.
I think part of it is like when I did the 10 pager with Roberta in Granada, I had to go back sort of like to my beginning to make sure she had the information she needed, because I was so used to working with Gwen and our shorthand and she knew the world. That when I started working with Roberta, who's fabulous, by the way, I did have to take a step back and say, like, okay, I need to write more here. I need to be more descriptive here. I need to give her more instructions because this is a new world for her.
Right.
And also refer to some of the previous issues so we had some consistency.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be perfect, but enough of a consistency so when someone comes who's been a fan for a while, will recognize, you know, the location or the space that they're in, without going like, you know, being confused.
Right.
I love that you mentioned you took classes on storytelling, like storytelling classes and stuff, like, yeah, you know, the sequential art, I should say. Do you find that you use that to give guidance to the colorists as well? Do you use that for that? Like, how has that been working with a colorist? Was it tough to get one and to fit that look and stuff like that? Tell us a little bit about the journey of finding a colorist.
Really spoiled here because Gwen did the coloring as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, so I'm very spoiled. Prior to that, when I did the original 6-issue miniseries, And I was very new. I mean, this was all brand new world for me, that I had some very good mentors and people who walk me through it as far as talking about color palette and who knew who to go to.
Right.
And so, yeah, I've been really lucky that way. And if, you know, I wish everyone had, you know, the mentors that I've had. I probably had at least 5 mentors in the comics community who had way more experience than I do. Right. And there's no way that Boston Metaphysical would have been as good as it is without them.
Yeah.
At all. It was good so point. Critical in the yeah. development of the story and the visuals and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about the title, Boston Metaphysical.
Yeah. Yes, I know. It is a mouthful. And I dreaded buying that URL. Because, can you imagine? You have no idea how many times I have typed this and then screwed it up and it's like, backspace. Yeah, it's very easy to screw this up.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do is have a name that evoked the time period. Mm. And the term metaphysical, you know, Boston is obvious. Metaphysical, I'm using it like it was used in the 1800s, which had to do with more paranormal and supernatural activity. Today, it has a more philosophical connotation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes people get a little confused with that and think that there's some sort of philosophy based in here. And I said, no, it's used as it was in the 1800s, because
right.
meanings of words change and evolve over time.
Yeah.
And choosing the word society, that was the term used at the time for something like an agency or a club.
Gotcha.
Or some sort of, you know, communal get together. And it did take about a week where I literally just would write down different names and put them all together and like, okay, this is it.
Nice. Yeah, no, that's tough. And I was going to ask you, was BMS.com taken or something? Like, because that would have been real good. Real nice. Just Boston Metaphysical Society. But now here's a question for you, Madeline. As far as when it comes to the writing, right? Like, you're talking about the words change through time. Dialogue, writing dialogue in your script. Yeah. How much research went into how they spoke in that era? Not just what they wore, but the way they communicated, especially in an area like, well, unless you're from Boston, maybe, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of, you know, the level of, I guess, just research that you have to do for that.
Yeah, I've done a significant amount of research, and a lot of that came out of a script I wrote while I was at UCLA called Stargazer, which was a biopic about a Scottish-American woman who arrived in this country pregnant, penniless, and abandoned by her husband in Boston, who late 1800s, and she was hired by the director of the Harvard Observatory as a maid originally, and then he saw her attention to detail, hired her to become what was then known as one of their female computers. Cool. And basically they crunched numbers, and her name was Mina Fleming. She actually existed, and discovered over 10,000 stars and developed her own stellar classification system. This was a script that won what's called the Sloan Fellowship. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's an organization that concentrates supporting creators who film scripts that focus on accurate science and depicting science and engineers as real people and not caricatures. And they've done quite a bit. So all that 1800s Boston research came from that.
Boom, gotcha.
So it just basically, I transferred all of that into this as far as background material goes.
Awesome.
And changed her from Scottish to Irish.
Okay.
So, yeah, I do. You know, it's interesting when you're writing, you know, idiomatic Irish as spoken in America, because you don't want to overdo it, because then your reader has a hard time processing it. So it's just enough to give it a flavor and give her character. And she will use certain words that the other people in the other characters will not, and vice versa.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know you're absolutely right. It's I really honed in on that when I did the script for the audio drama. Because that obviously is all oral, and so each of the characters really had to speak very distinctly, so your audience could understand them and know, oh, here's Samuel, here's Granville, and
It's interesting because that's the challenge of writing comics, right? Because it's not something that you're going to hear. You're not going to hear their accent. You have to read their accent. So that's something that's very different from, say, for example, a screenplay. Obviously, that's going to end up on TV or on the big screen. So, you know, the actors will take care of that. Whereas when you're writing a comic, the letterer is going to take care of that, right? Like or your script will say, hey, this is going to be written like this, so that when I'm reading it, I sound it out that way. You know, it's a very interesting, you know, just difference between the two. But I'm happy. I mean, we can maybe share the campaign a little bit, and you can just talk us through some of the stuff that you have on there.
Yeah, but one of the things I wanted to ask, because I mean, I by looking at this, you know, how much research did you have to do prior to the start of this, just to get the look and feel, the clothing, you know, the setting? And then how much of that did your artist have to do? Because I mean, it's beautiful work. It's rendered beautifully. And just as an artist, I know that the amount of research that I would have to do to pull off that look must have been, in my eyes, I would think a couple of months of just getting it all right, that look, and then finding the right artist to capture that look.
Yeah, there is that's the cover by Marguerite Savage. Fortunately for both Marguerite and Roberta, they had references to take from. They had the work done by Emily. They had the work done by Gwen, and that was enough for them. I mean, they're pros. They can knock this stuff, you know, out of the park. Once you give them the references they need, and then they tweak it for their style, which is why I hired them in the first place. but it is. There is a significant amount of research, as we discussed, that goes in. And I've been living in this world probably for like the last 10 years. So for me, it's just, it's rough. And I love history. I mean, that's one of the reasons I got into the steampunk genre. And this is actually more, I would call it even more alternate history than steampunk. It's more steampunk-ish.
Right,
people have told me, but it's a very interesting time period in American history. The late 1800s, early 1900s, there was a lot of social, cultural, and technological change. Mm-hmm. So, as a writer, that just makes it ripe for organic conflict for your characters. There's class issues. There's race issues. There's a ton of, you know, social issues going on at the time. And a lot of that is covered, sometimes more direct, sometimes more subtly in the background.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. Those are
the covers of the four sequels that are in volume two.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I think that when you're doing a period piece, right, the challenge is always there to make it look as authentic as possible. And I think that your artists have definitely just taken that challenge and just blew it out the water. It just looks fantastic.
Gwen, I think, had done one other comic before this, and she just bloomed with this. She's already amazing. I mean, she can do skull. I mean, she's just freaking amazing at whatever she does. She's doing Dead End Moon right now. Which is also a supernatural Western, mm-hmm. and that's lovely as well. But yeah, I think to do this kind of art, I think you need to love history. I think you need to love the detail in it, whether you be the writer or the artist.
I was just going to say, if you're a writer, you have to love it too. Like you have to love this. Yeah. I mean, look at those pages. I mean,
that's some of Roberta's work. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the lighting, you know, the everything about it. I mean, I think the color choice is spot on.
To the desk. Look at the desk. Like, the desk is so, you know what I mean, that era. You know, it's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, the coloring was done by Warnia Sahadewa. I believe that's how you pronounce it. And I apologize if I screwed it up.
Better you than
us. I know how you feel.
No, I've never heard it spoken out loud. So I'm doing my best guess.
I hear you. Yeah, I wasn't even going to try. I'm like, oh, man. No, but this looks great. I mean, listen, this. So, okay. So tell us a little bit about some of the rewards that we have here. What are some of the tiers that people?
We have your basic digital tier, which gets you a digital copy of, it's 176 pages of the volume two. There's also the option to get both the digital volume one and volume two, and the print versions of both. I call that my New to Boston, and I believe also the coloring book is part of the New to Boston, which is a lot of fun. Nice. We have a new lapel pin. I kind of have this thing where whenever I do a Kickstarter for a graphic novel, I do a new pin because I have people who collect these things. It's pretty wild.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we're doing a steam engine lapel pin this time. Also, you can pick up the audio drama in CD and download. There's a proof of the steam engine.
Nice.
And there's our fun coloring book. Both the steam engine and the coloring book were done by Alejandro Lee. And I'm currently working with him on our sixth stretch goal. You know how I said I usually map them all out?
Yeah.
Well, I decided I wanted to change things up, so I didn't quite have it ready to go. So it's now the super secret number six stretch goal. which once it, I'll probably have a proof in a couple of days. So I tell them, just wait, you'll love it. No, they will. The people are going to love this. This is just amazing. What I found, they're absolutely going to love it. That's the cover of the prequel novel to the graphic novel, Storm of Secrets. And
how many pages is the novel, Madeline? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, it's like 300 and something. It's like about 82,000 words ish. Wow. Yeah, no, it's a full novel. And Prelude is an anthology of short stories and novellas. I wrote those while I was in, basically when we were in production through issues 1 through 6, I started writing those to develop canon for the world.
Okay. So this was part of your world building. You started doing this whole thing. Wow.
Yes.
Awesome. Now, it's interesting because when you start world building, you start creating more stories in your head. Have you now? Yeah. So you've developed. Now you're like, oh, wow, I have this story to tell and I'm ready to go with this. That's amazing. Have you started writing any of those scripts yet, or they're still in?
Oh, yeah. I actually have a trilogy of novels that I finished the first one that is about it's before the graphic novel. It deals with what I call the House Wars, which is the equivalent of the American Civil War, which has airships and demons and all sorts of fun stuff and lots of political intrigue and airship battles and good things like that.
I like how you inject all of that into your stories, like you're able to inject all of that stuff. And see, but that's the beauty of being an independent, publisher of comics, because you can inject all of that stuff in there and nobody can tell you any different, you know, like that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, and fortunately, Source Point Press liked it because they picked me up in 2019. Oh, so yeah,
you all right?
Yeah, they were awesome. they were happy with it.
Yeah. No, that Source Point Press is doing a lot of great stuff. I think they have another book. We had one of the artists from I can't remember the name of the book now. It's a ghost story about an old house, and I can't remember the name of it. Damian Torres is the artist. Now he's going to kill me because I can't remember the name of his book. But they're doing a lot of great stuff.
They do.
When it comes to period pieces, like I think that they kind of, do a lot of that stuff. But this looks great, Madeline. This looks amazing. Now, let me ask you a question. When it came to you writing that book about Kickstarter, what prompted you to write one about,
couple things. One, the very first Kickstarter I did, I did the crash and burn in a very glorious way, like a lot of people do.
Right.
And then I, went back and re-strategized, and we've been successful ever since. Wow. But about 3 or 4 Kickstarters in, I started seeing all these. Why don't you pull up the green one? That's the second edition. If anyone wants to get it, get the green cover, because that's the second edition.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just kept seeing all these really great Kickstarters and comics that did the crash and burn as well. And I could see where they were failing. Wow. I could see what they weren't doing. And so I just sat down and essentially wrote the field guide for them. And it's not a long book. I always recommend read it through all the way and then go back and read it again and make notes that are particular for your project, because it starts at the very beginning and there's going to be some people who read it have like, okay, I have a fairly decent fan base. So how do I put together my pre-launch strategy? You know, how do I put together a campaign strategy? You know, what is this about fulfillment and stretch goals? And I even add a section on taking care of yourself, because a lot of people do, as you know, the meltdown. You know, these are hard. These are a full-time job.
Oh yeah. And you know, I wish we'd have had you on the show about a month ago when I was preparing mine. A month to next week, I'm like, oh, I'm about to order this book tonight and start reading and see what I can salvage. But no, you're right. People do burn themselves out. I mean, Sam, you're a perfect example of just grinding for 30 days and not, and just watching the campaign every 5 minutes.
Yeah, you almost can't help it, which is why I make sure I keep a regular schedule. You know, I hit the gym a few times a week, and I leave the phone in the locker. It does not come out on the floor with me at all.
Good for you.
Yeah, you definitely have to step away. And he, even on Sunday, my husband and I live out in Los Angeles. So there's like this beautiful area called Descanso Gardens, mm-hmm. where all the everything's blooming. And so, yeah, it's like, we're going to take 2 hours and just not looking at the phone, and just look at pretty things. And
right. Relax. How difficult. It's crazy how like hard that has been, right? Hey, what's going on, Cody? It's That's crazy like, how difficult that's become.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the bar has risen quite a bit over the last few years. And I know Tyler James and Russell Nolte have really helped, including myself, a lot of people up their game to be successful.
Yeah.
And you really have to look at your Kickstarter homepage as essentially a grant proposal. Mm-hmm. So you have to make what you want really clear right up front.
Right.
And you have to make, you have to have reward tiers that are accessible to every level of funding. But I can't stress enough, I think probably if you're going to ask me what annoys you most about a Kickstarter page is, if it's not written well, is right up front, tell me what this is for. Tell me that it's going to, you know, hi, my name is Joe, I am running a Kickstarter campaign to get funds to print my 100-page graphic novel.
Right.
Okay, that's great. And now I know what you're going to do with the money. And then I can go down, if you know, see a little bit more, read a little about the story, show me some art, tell me why you're doing it, you know, why this project is important to you. Don't forget to mention your team.
Right.
You don't do this unless you're the artist writer yourself, which is fine. Then you are your team, and that's totally fair. Just make it really clear of what you're doing. Don't let me, if I have to go look for it, you've already lost me.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it's crazy because it sounds so basic, like common sense, right? But you don't really apply it to it as much. You think, oh, the pretty pictures will sell it to them.
Well, I think what happens is that people know it in their head when they're doing it. So they assume that everyone else is going to know it too, and not realize that you actually have to put it on the page.
Right.
And as writers, how many times have you gone back through a second and third draft and you go like, but shouldn't this have been in here? Because it was in my head, but it didn't make it to the page. Yeah. And I'm sure the same thing happens.
Yeah.
You know, when doing something like this, is that you have it in your head, but it hasn't made it onto the page yet.
Mm. Good point. Yeah. No, this looks great though. I mean, listen, that book is invaluable, what you just wrote, and the Kickstarter page looks incredible, Madeline. So
thank you.
What's after this campaign? I mean, you have 15 days, but what do you have planned for the story, for the journey of these characters? What's going on next?
I have already outlined out a 4-issue miniseries. I'm never doing a 6-issue again. That's crazy talk. But that's insane. But yeah, I have a 4-issue miniseries that kind of segues off the last sequel, which is called, you know, The Book of Demons. And for those who've read it, you probably already know we're going to Colorado Springs and Tesla's coming back. We're traveling.
Okay.
And there's going to be a new, it's a murder mystery.
Nice.
So I said, we're going to move and let's have a murder mystery and let's see what the other side of the country is doing right now in 1896.
Mm, okay.
And in this world, in the BMS universe.
There you go.
And it's been fun. So we're going to meet some new people and some new great houses, which dominate American politics in this world. And
Madeline, how do you limit that to, like, say, for example, I know you said I'm not doing 6 anymore, I'm doing 4. How do you manage to kind of, in your head even, or is it through like just notes, outlines? How do you keep that from being 6? How do you say, okay, I'm going to make it 4 and it's going to be 4?
Well, originally I was hoping to make it in 3, but it was pretty clear that it needed to be 4.
Gotcha.
Just as I was working through the outline.
Okay.
As I outline, then I know if it was going to go past 4, then I knew I'd have to go back and cut stuff.
Right.
And I'd go back and look for stuff that was not directly relevant to that storyline and start honing it out and just cutting it out. And because that's one of the nice things about writing comics is you learn how to be brief. You've got to get the story down to the bare essentials.
Right. Yeah. So it doesn't drag. So you're flipping. So you're turning the page. You want that page turn even more. So
absolutely.
You know, when you're writing prose. No, that's a good point. You have any more questions, Sammy? Or
no, just looking, your backer count just increased as we're talking. Look at that. So I had a question about the Kickstarter book. Why the second draft? Why the second, the updated edition? What was the difference between the two?
I had learned more about fulfillment, and I'm trying to remember because it was a few years ago. I actually do need to update. I think the last time I try to update it after every Kickstarter, and just because life, I haven't been able to do it. So I think the last time it was updated was 2020. But I think primarily it was talking about fulfillment, because I had changed over to using a pirateship.com, mm-hmm. and I get a lot of overseas backers, and they have what's called a simple export rate to 55 different countries. And that, one, that saves the backer a ton of money, though they will have to pay VAT. There's nothing I can do about that.
Right.
But it was a lifesaver during the pandemic because USPS refused to ship to Australia. But Pirate Ship could, because what they do is they use a third-party carrier. It's called Ascendia, I believe. And they essentially, as I understand it, they wait until the pallet is full to go to whatever country, because that's what cuts the cost. You have to wait until the pallet is full. That pallet is full. It gets on the plane to Australia and circumvents USPS completely and arrives to the local carrier in Australia or the UK or Germany or, you know, pick one of your 55 countries.
So on on average, what is the savings in shipping for an international?
It depends on the weight, because there is a top limit of 4 pounds for the simple export rate. But what we have done is my all book packages are over 4 pounds. So what we do is we split them, and that saves them a ton of money. If I had to send that by USPS, it'd probably be upward over $80.
Yeah.
And with them, it's around 55-ish, nice. 60. Nice. You know, there's some, it depends.
Right.
So, but they're saving, depending on the weight of the package, they can save anywhere from $10 to $50.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice. That's fantastic. Yeah, because I mean, I use Pirate Ship as well. And it's made a huge savings.
Compared
to what we were doing when I was doing it before with USPS, I was getting killed.
For those who are using Pirate Ship and you don't know about simple export rate, you just have to go into the chat and say like, "Hi, can you add simple export rate to my overall rates?" And they'll do it in like 24 hours.
Right.
And then when you pull up to for anything overseas, or I shouldn't say overseas, outside of the United States.
Outstanding. So this, we're at the point where we're going to put the camera on you and you're going to pitch why, what's the Metaphysical Society. So, and then where can people find you as well? So here you go. It's all yours.
Hi. For those of you who just came in late, I am running a Kickstarter for Boston Metaphysical Society Volume 2, which is about an ex-Pinkerton detective, a spirit photographer, and a genius scientist who battles supernatural forces in late 1800s Boston. We have some very cool reward tiers and stretch goals, which we've already made of magnets and digital comics, and we've got lapel pins and books and all sorts of fun things. And you can find me on Kickstarter, of course, at Boston Metaphysical Society or at bostonmetaphysicalsociety.com, Facebook, Boston Metaphysical Society Comic, Twitter, M. Holly Rosing, and Instagram at MC Holly and the numeral 1. And thank you for coming, guys. And thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you for being here. This is amazing. This is good. Yes. So much. Listen, I got a copy of the book for the Kickstarter already. I've pledged to the campaign. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go, Madeline.
Thank you.
You sold me in.
I can catch you up again.
Yeah, so, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I also got your Kickstarter books. So I'm just letting you know.
Thank you. And I've already signed up for the alien in the toilet thing, because with a name like that, that's like a win-win in my book. You can't lose with there's an alien in my toilet.
Yeah. That's right. And then add the duty from Uranus and you're good.
Don't start those jokes.
Don't start those jokes. But it was a pleasure having you on. Congratulations on a successful campaign.
Yes.
And congratulations on getting picked up with Source Point Press.
That's correct.
Fantastic, fantastic. Are you putting the work? The quality's there. It's obvious. So the universe, you know, pays you back when you put in the work. So congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. So thank you again for being on the show. And, you're always welcome back.
Yes. Thank you.
You got it.
All right.
Fantastic. She's killing the game. She's doing a great job. Yeah. She has a quality team.
Big shout out to everyone in the chat who we've kind of just flashed on the screen, but we were talking to her so much. Yes. I know Michael was going in.
Yes.
The joke about all the research I did versus the research she's done. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate you, acknowledging that. Big shout out to Jonathan. Two Geeks Talking. I called him Cody. I thought it was Keeping It Geekly, because I saw it flash really quick and then it was gone. But thank you guys for coming on and supporting Madeline with this incredible, incredible project. So much work she's put into this thing. The amount of research she's done for the late 1800s. And, she's obviously teamed up with an incredible group of artists. So good for her. And, she's given us a secret sauce. She's given us a secret sauce. What's made her so successful in the Kickstarter game. So if you guys are starting a campaign of your own,
check it out.
Go to Amazon and check that book out.
Check it out.
You got to pick it up. Got to get it. It's anything that helps with this crazy Kickstarter world is really much appreciated. So, man, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you guys for watching.
This guy, I think he's Showtime at the Apollo with this guy.
It's like, he's going in on the kangaroos. What happened with the kangaroos?
Yes, and tomorrow night,
stealing our mail.
We have two guests on tomorrow night. We'll be on live tomorrow. We're going to have
you have a cosplayer tomorrow.
Veronica Foy, cosplayer. She'll be on the show live tomorrow night. And then after Veronica, we also have
Travis Webb, I believe.
Right? Travis Webb, yes. So we have two guests tomorrow night. We'll be live. So join us tomorrow night. And don't forget Thursday morning for the Morning Brew with the Crazy Crew. We're going to have some great topics for you. So join us for a cup of coffee and a quick chat at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we talk about all things industry related and some topics that we come up with during the week. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe. When we grow, the indie community grows, and more eyes on the show, that means more eyes on our guests. And that's what we do this for. And don't forget, sign up for the Adventures of Wonder Duck. We're going live next Wednesday, 8 o'clock. George is hitting that button at 8:30. So the Adventures of Wonder Duck, join us next week. That's Wednesday where we pop off. And and if you haven't done so already, sign up for There's an Alien in My Toilet. If you come back and get issue number 2, and you backed issue number 1, if you're a physical backer and you become a physical backer for issue number 2, you're going to get a refrigerator magnet of Super Duty with the diabolical egomaniac overlord nemesis Poopoo in the background. And if you're a digital backer from issue number 1 and you come back for a digital of number 2, you will get a screensaver for your computer or phone, whatever you use. It'll be formatted in either way. So, join us then. There's another great show.
Yeah.
Leave the comments below. What's this? What do I got here? What do we get if we back? Back issue. There's no issue zeros unless I decide to release Cosmic Wars. That's the last of the issue zeros. There's Alien in My Toilet. Campaign as an add-on. In the add-on section, you'll be able to add on the full 160-page graphic novel of Forbidden. That'll be available as an add-on there as well as physical copies of all of my kids' books. So Thank you. Was that Wonder Duck? So yeah, so it was another great episode. Thank you guys again. If you like this episode, give us a thumbs up. If you haven't done so already, subscribe.
Make sure that you are subscribing to the channel, because you know we have a lot of good stuff coming up Thursday morning. Don't forget the Morning Brew with the Crazy Crew. We're going to be talking about some you know, stuff that you guys should probably already know. But we'll be on there on Thursday. We'll give you the topic tomorrow night. We'll discuss it a little something. Don't forget to sign up, like Sam said, to The Adventures of Wonder Duck and to Disneyland in My Toilet. I want to just showcase the cover for the homage cover that my man Joe Holly did for The Adventures of Wonder Duck.
That's going to be the number one cover.
Yeah, and don't forget, if you've already signed up, let me know. Send this out to you guys as a thank you. So, yeah, no, that's all I got today, Sammy.
All right, mi gente, it's time for us to leave. With that said, I'm Sam the Crazy Man Vera.
Wow. George the Chima Medina.
And Jeez. We are. It's just easy.
Crazy.
No, I was talking about my friend Acquiesce. I met him.
Say my name. Say my name.
This is what you were thinking?
Oh, he described me. He said, I'm the idiot.
What? You're listening to Catch the Craze. You are listening to Catch the Craze.
You're listening to Catch the Craze.